some religious imagery, and feminine aesthetics. Tober Gardner has an African-American and Persian cultural background, and they often turn to visual language of their prospective cultures past for inspiration. United Colors is at 6011 North 6th Street, KCK. Nelson Atkins Museum of Art is once again inviting you to the Dia de los Muertos Festival. Dia de los Muertos, or Day of the Dead, is a Mexican holiday that honors the spirit of loved ones who have passed on. The Nelson Atkins annual Dia de los Muertos Festival is a Kansas City favorite, bringing together local communities and international collaboration between artists and live entertainment to host a colorful and spirited take on this timeless Mexican tradition. It comes your way on Sunday, November 5th at 10 a.m. For more information on these and many other events in our area, go to kkfi.org/artskcgo.
This is Paul Cannon, a volunteer, and you're listening to 90.1 FM KKFI, Kansas City Community Radio.
The views and opinions of this program are those of its host and guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and opinions of 90.1 FM, KKFI, Midcoast Radio Project, or its staff and volunteers.
About it is appealing, everything the traffic will allow. Nowhere could you get that happy feeling when you are stealing that extra bow. There's no people like show people. They smile when they are low. Yesterday they told you you would not go far. That night you open and there you are. Next day on your dressing room they costumes, the scenery, the makeup, the props, the audience that lifts you when you're down. The headaches, the heartaches, the backaches, the flops, the sheriff who escorts you out of town. The opening when your heart beats like a drum. The closing when the customers don't come. Get word before the show has started that your favorite uncle died at dawn. On top of that, your partner has parted. You're brokenhearted, but you go on. There's no people like show people. They smile when they are low. Even with a turkey that you know will fold, you may be stranded out in the cold. Still, you wouldn't change it for a sack of gold. Let's go on with the show. Let's go on with the show.
Well, hello and welcome to this edition of the KKFI Arts Magazine Show. I am Michael Hook, your host. Glad to have you with us on this Monday here in Kansas City. Marvelous Monday. We know how you get on Monday, too, as you listen to the Arts Magazine Show right here on KKFI 90.1 FM, your community radio station right here in Kansas City. And aren't you glad to be here? That's better than a lot of other places you could be. I think you'll agree with me on that. We have some interesting interviews all set up for you today. We're going to travel over, for one thing, to Tin Pan Alley, where the Barn Players are producing Ragtime. We'll talk about that. And then in the later half of the program, the 60th anniversary season of the Kansas City Repertory Theater's production of A Christmas Carol. We'll be talking about that. Seems early, but it's really not. Look at the schedule. The shows start in November for the Christmas Carol. And Jason Chanos, the director of the show and the associate artistic director of the Rep, will be here at the bottom of the hour. But first, the Barn Players, now back in Johnson County. And isn't that quite a story? I was talking with my guest, Daniel Vasquez, before we went on the air, and we were talking about all the places that they had been, a lot of which he isn't old enough to remember. But that's to be expected, you know, when you've been around for as long as some of us have. Ragtime. It begins on Thursday, the 26th of October, coming right up, just a couple of days away. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Performances then continue on Friday, the 27th at 7:30. Two performances on Saturday, a matinee at 2 in the afternoon, and an evening performance on the 28th at 7:30. Then it closes with a matinee on the 29th, Sunday, at 2 o'clock p.m. at the new home for the Barn Players, the Johnson County Arts and Heritage Center, 8788 Metcalf in the Black Box Theater over there. And we welcome Daniel to our program today. You're the stage manager for this.
Yes, I am.
And a lot of people will want to go simply to hear that Tin Pan Alley Harlem style music that's going to be going on. It really is, in many ways, exciting to listen to.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. This score is one of my favorites. Lynn Ahrens and Stephen Flaherty produced this back in 1998. And it is the amount of genres that this really sweeps is just gorgeous. There are these sweeping ballads. There are these Tin Pan Alley sort of tunes. There are just so many different styles of music that really encapsulate how America was changing at this time. Mm-hmm. The show is set in the early 1900s. And so we see these three groups, the Harlem Ensemble, the immigrants from the from European, and the New Rochellians, who are in their kind of, you know, own little world off in New Rochelle. And so we see these three groups kind of collide throughout the show. And it is very interesting how the different music is used as a storytelling device, as the Harlemites have their own little music, immigrants have their own style of music, and the New Rochellians have their own, and they each interweave with each other. It's a real special show to just listen to, frankly.
Yeah, and getting all that to mesh could not have been easy.
Oh, absolutely. It is, the score is very, very hard. Thankfully, we've had a ton of people under the music director namely right now Maddie Jenkins, but towards the beginning we had one of our cast members fill in for our music director, Kayla McCarroll. I just want to shout out him. It has been a glorious process to get to where we are right now as we're about to open, but this cast has been absolutely incredible in terms of their resilience and their talent.
You know, when people think of this show, at least when you hear people talk of their opinions, if they haven't seen it, of course, they think of, this is piano music. But you told me earlier, nine-piece orchestra.
Yes. Funny story, actually. Yesterday, we actually had seven of our nine-piece orchestra in rehearsal yesterday, completely just out of the blue, because we had our music director reach out to all of them in terms of like, hey, come and listen, watch, and see how the music flows. But it ended up turning into a full run with almost a full orchestra. And some of these people have actually not seen the books until just this past weekend. And they were playing as if they had known the music for the past 10 years.
They're probably familiar with the numbers.
Absolutely.
And that would help, I would think.
Absolutely. And so the orchestra has already shown so much talent. And so you get two combinations of the talent behind the scenes, the talent on the stage, and the talent in the pit. It's going to end up being an incredible show.
Yeah, I would think that would be something that is, well, I shouldn't say easy to play. I shouldn't say that, because Lord knows I couldn't do it. Mm-hmm. But I would think that being familiar with music, that they would have fun playing style of music.
Yes. That being said, yeah, it's hard. Ragtime, the genre, is not necessarily one of the easiest to play, especially with all the syncopation involved and the accented notes. It really, the amount of tempo changes and just complete different lines of music that have been brought up to each instrument is amazing to see these people play. It's challenging, but it's fun. And they're and yeah, I could see the smiles on their faces yesterday as they were playing through this score. So it's great to see that everybody is having a great time with this.
Sure. We're speaking with Daniel Vasquez, and he is the stage manager for the Barn Players production of Ragtime, which opens this Thursday, the 26th, 7:30 p.m. at the Johnson County Arts and Heritage Center on Metcalf in Johnson County. And, you know, people have different ways of thinking of things like this. All of the websites that I looked at said the music of Harlem, Tin Pan Alley, etc. How would you, and if you don't feel informed enough to say so, well, we'll look it up on the internet. So how would you explain to people what is meant by Tin Pan Alley?
Well, with Tin Pan Alley, we're reaching way back into my college years.
Well, sure,
that, American history. Musical theater.
You're a college man. You came.
Tin Pan Alley really started as necessarily and believe me, I am not the historical expert on this, so I may be completely wrong. But a lot of Tin Pan Alley came from this legitimate alley of New York, where a lot of European immigrants were settled, a lot of Jewish immigrants were settled, and many of these tenements had pianos. And so as you were kind of walking through this part of New York, you would be hearing the tinkling of pianos throughout the entire area. And that kind of is what kind of gave it its name. It's kind of like this tin pan kind of sound that was playing throughout this area of New York at the time. And so you hear that a lot with our the Jewish Immigrant Ensemble and their song specifically. But it's a very, very beautiful style of music. In our show, the reeds really take over a lot of that part of the music, and it's just gorgeous.
Yeah, some would say, I've heard this said, that the tin pans were where they had the pans out as people walked by and they were playing outside, they could give them a donation, so to speak. And I was told anyway, that's how the term tin pan came about.
I don't know.
It's rare when I know more than the guest. Extremely rare. But that's the kind of music you're listening to. Tell the people about some of the numbers that they'll be hearing.
Yes.
Recognizable things, perhaps?
Unless you are a really, really big musical theater geek, this is one of those that there are a couple. Audra McDonald was in the original cast, so many people might know her.
Three's Company.
Yes.
She was Mrs. Roper, if you remember that show.
But she actually won the Tony for her performance in this musical.
Wow.
So one of her songs, Your Daddy's Son, is quite an amazing song. The title song, Ragtime, where we introduce all of the characters and all of the stuff that the audience needs to know going in, is gorgeous. Gliding is one of those immigrant songs that is also one of the premieres. And then the 11 o'clock number, Make Them Hear You, which is this beautiful song about making your voice heard in the fight against racial injustice. That is just gorgeous and brings me to tears pretty much every time we run it.
Okay. And you've heard it a lot by now.
Yes, absolutely.
So you have a lot of Kleenexes back there.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. There is a story connected to it along with the music.
Mm-hmm.
So tell us a little bit about the story. Don't give away any secrets.
So Ragtime follows three groups, as I said earlier, of the immigrants, the European immigrants that come to settle in New York, the New Rochellians, who are the rich white neighbors of Manhattan. And then you also have the Harlem Ensemble, who are in the midst of this burgeoning art, kind of near the Harlem Renaissance. Not exactly that time period, but they are experiencing a lot of music revivals, the invention of the ragtime genre. But these three groups kind of collide. And so we kind of see a lot of moments of how different classes interact. We see a lot of moments of how African-American people were treated at this time. There is this, I won't spoil it, but the towards the end of the first act is when we really get into the meat of the show, where something happens that the lead African-American male has to fight for his justice to be served. And so that basically leads us through the rest of the show. And it's a gorgeous and unfortunately still relevant story, just because of I see a lot of parallels between our time here in 2023 and what was experienced back in 1906, especially dealing with a lot of our racial injustices that we've seen, as well as trade unions and different things. One of the many great things about this show is that it pulls a lot from our actual history in the United States. So we have a lot of figureheads within the story, like Booker T. Washington, Emma Goldman, the radical anarchist, J.P. Morgan, Henry Ford. They all make appearances. Evelyn Nesbit, a vaudevillian star. So we get to see a lot of what we know in our history, as well as this fictional part that it was brought in from the original book Ragtime by E.L. Doctorow.
Yeah. Yeah. Early 1900s. Rough time.
Yes.
A lot of conflict. And it is amazing how this show kind of brings, well, that would be giving it away. Brings these groups together.
Yes.
In various ways. Sure.
Yeah. It's a gorgeous show. It's one of my favorites. And it's a big reason of why I'm here today as a theater professional.
Sure. Sure. Tell me about your cast.
My cast. Oh, I could go on for days.
Well, we don't have quite that much time, but take a few minutes anyway.
Yes. We have a cast of about 30 for this concert version of Ragtime. And so what I love about this and what I love about community theater is that we have a lot of different people from different walks of life. One of the biggest things that I've seen, especially growing up in this kind of barn player scene, is the age range. Our youngest are Nora and Abel, who play our little boy and little girl, are 9 years old. And then we have our oldest, who plays his grandfather in the show in his mid-60s. I'm gonna shoot under it as not to offend him. But he's in the mid-60s, early 70s range. But it is really cool to see how many of these people. We have a lot of people my age in their 20s. We have a lot of people middle-aged. To see all these people come together is really great. And they are all just so musically talented. Our principal cast is each solo just knocks my socks off, especially those by our Cole House Walker Jr., who is one of the leads, Caleb Clemens and Janelle Johnson, who play Sarah. Those two are the heart of the show, in my humble opinion, in terms of how the plot revolves around them and how I have been affected by the show. So seeing these two amazing humans tell this story and with their talent has been one of my greatest joys of life right now.
I wanted to ask you about that. You told me earlier that this show was personally important to you. Do you want to expound on that at all?
Yes. So picture this. I was 12 years old watching. At that point, I had just finished my first ever musical as an ensemble member in You're a Good Man, Charlie Brown. And so that summer, I wanted to consume as much theater as I could. I was lucky enough to be close next to Shawnee Mission Theater in the Park. And that season, they produced their production of Ragtime. And it was one of my definitely first developing moments in terms of how what kind of theater could be produced. At that point, it was You're a Good Man, Charlie Brown, and then I had seen a production of Guys and Dolls. That was like what theater was for me. And so seeing Ragtime and seeing all of these hard issues dealt with in a way that is both sensitive and entertaining was just a shocker to me. It shook me to my core to get to experience this show at such a young age that it really formed the type of theater that I like to do. It really formed the themes and the genres that I really love to do as a director. And so I have a lot to think about this show, especially because I am going into my my 10th year doing theater. So it's kind of become kind of a full circle moment for me, stage managing this show, to just kind of reflect on where I've been and where I'm still going to be going.
Yeah. Only your 10th year.
Yes. 10th out of...
some of the people on this show say 10 years, right? He's a rookie.
Yeah, well, that BFA is still fresh.
Sure. And, there are things about that that will always stand out in your mind. You will remember things you did when you were, for instance, in college and before college, years later.
Yes.
You'll have a great memory of that. And that's just the way some shows are, especially shows that mean something to you. They'll stick with you forever.
Yeah.
They really will.
It has been a very fulfilling experience getting to do this show with this cast.
What all have you done previous to now? You have mentioned Theater in the Park, some other things like that.
Yes. Ever since graduating in May, I've really just thrown myself back into the Kansas City music scene after going to Emporia State for the past 4 years. I've been with the White Theater at the Jewish Community Center. I've been with the Unicorn, which is just a stone's throw away from where we are.
Oh,
right
yeah,
now.
You can throw one. Let's open the window. No.
And then, of course, being with the Barn is kind of my original home of branching out into the Kansas City Community Theater area.
Yeah. We're speaking with Daniel Vasquez, and he is the stage manager for the most recent production about to go up at the Barn Players. It's called Ragtime, the music of Harlem, Tin Pan Alley, and as Daniel mentioned, these different groups, different immigrant groups, African-American type groups, and how they all mesh together, how the music mesh together, and that's part of the story of Ragtime, which opens up this Thursday the 26th at 7:30. Performances then continue on Friday the 27th at 7:30. Two performances on Saturday. Do the actors whine? Saturday afternoon, a matinee at 2 o'clock. Saturday evening, regular evening performance at 7:30. Then another matinee on Sunday the 29th at 2 o'clock p.m. All the performances are at the Johnson County Arts and Heritage Center, 8788 Metcalf in the Black Box Theater over there. And if you need to MapQuest to find Metcalf, I don't know if that's necessary, but 8788 Metcalf, you need the zip code if you do MapQuest, and it's 66212. We're speaking with Daniel right now. You can call. There is a number to call if you have special concerns, like if someone in your party is handicapped, for instance. That's the best example I can give, but there are many reasons why you might want to call them. So that number is 913-432-9100, or you can go online to thebarnplayers.org. And yes, you have to put the in there, because believe it or not, there are other theaters in this nation of ours that are called Barn Players.
Yep.
So you want to get the in there. So it's thebarnplayers.org. Boy. You're also, you told me earlier, you'll be part of the 6x10 festival that the Barn does almost every year when there's not COVID. that'll be happening November 17th, 18th, and 19th, and you're directing one of those shows.
Yes. Our 6x10 is our next and final portion of our season, our 68th season, before we move on to 2024 and bigger and brighter things. We have six 10-minute plays by six local playwrights, all within this just greater Kansas City area. And I read all of them. They are all amazing. And I am so grateful to be living in an area where we have so many great playwrights. And so I am directing one of them. And it is, I haven't begun that process just yet because this show is going up this week.
Oh, sure. You have a few weeks.
I do have a couple weeks.
But not a long time.
Not a long time.
The 17th, they'll be coming up pretty soon.
Yes. And so it is going to be a very, very fun time. That the 6x10 is headed up by our assistant artistic director, Lynn Reddick, and our board member, Isle Haggins, who is a very, very prominent director here in Kansas City. And so it has been a really fun time to just get to know what this area looks like with local playwrights that aren't, you know, that usually aren't going out and producing their own work, but they're, you know, at home writing at their own laptops, just writing, either writing for fun for and or writing for 10-minute play festivals like this.
Sure. Yeah, 6x10 means, in case you don't know, do you want to explain it or you want me to? Six shows, of course.
Yeah, six shows, all 10 minutes each. So about an hour of just new theater. It's really, you really get the opportunity to experience new theater, especially new theater that's produced here in Kansas City and made by Kansas Cityans.
Yeah, you really have to get into it. 10 minutes is not a long time.
Yes.
So the setup has to come up really fast. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, whatever area you want to examine, you know, that comes right with it.
Absolutely.
And have to draw it to some kind of collusion. Mm-hmm. There is sometimes collusion, but it comes to a conclusion then.
Yes, I always say that writing a 10-minute play is an art in and of itself.
Oh, I agree.
Just to be able to get something laid out, make a conflict happen, and reach a resolution, and hopefully get an emotion out from the audience in just 10 minutes. It really is an art.
Oh, and that will be happening, as I said, on November 17th, 18th, and 19th, that is it a Friday, Saturday?
Friday Sunday? And Saturday and Sunday, yes.
So I'm going to guess the Friday and Saturdays are 7:30.
Yes.
The Sunday is probably 2 o'clock. Mm-hmm. That's the usual pattern
yes.
for the barn. And that will be taking place as well at mm-hmm. the Johnson County Arts and Heritage Center on
yes.
Metcalf.
Yes, it will be.
Yeah. Anything else? Did they send you with things? Other things they want you to talk to me about there. Their season starts after the 1st of January.
Yes, we have we announced our 2024 season just recently, starting off with Agatha Christie's Witness for the Prosecution in January. In May, we have The Secret Garden, a very popular musical. Dates are slipping my mind, but sometime in the summer, we are doing Escape to Margaritaville, written by Jimmy Buffett.
Oh, that ought to be good.
Yes. Yeah. And then our final musical will be Beautiful, the Carole King musical, sometime, I believe, in November, or sometime in September. And then finally, our 6x10 for 2024 will be later that year as well.
Has the Carole King musical been on the boards in this area before? Will you be the first one?
We will be one of the first community theaters, I believe so. We were beat to the punch by MTKC, I believe.
Oh, okay.
Just really. But yes, we will be one of the first.
Yeah. We're wrapping up here. We'll have Jason on in just a few minutes. But I want you to, I don't know, summarize however you want. Encouraging people to come to hear this music. What if they want to, in the style of other shows these days, which is becoming popular, dress up like people of that era?
I wouldn't recommend it. Just come as you are. It's great.
Okay.
But this musical is special, and it's really one of the most beautiful scores that I have ever encountered in my time. And to be in a room with just the script, the score, and the music, it really is special. And so I really would recommend that everyone comes and checks this amazing piece of work out. And I believe that it will change a lot of perspectives in terms of how you look at theater and what theater can be produced.
Yeah, you'd be surprised, all the people that are fans of that era. Perhaps you haven't heard of him, but the late Tiny Tim, the singer, mm-hmm. falsetto voice. I talked with him several times, and he told me that he was an expert on mm-hmm. turn of the century music, and he was talking about 1900, mm-hmm. not 2000, mm-hmm. which was also a turn of the century
yes.
year. And but he was an expert on that, and we talked a lot about why he felt that music was so important and so entertaining. Well, thank you for being here.
Yep. Thanks for having me.
Your colleagues at the barn. The music of Tin Pan Alley, Harlem, and Hall, that immigrant experience, how they all mesh together and is told in a story that will be happening at the barn. It's called Ragtime. It opens this Friday. This Thursday, the 26th at 7:30 p.m. Performances continue then on the 27th at 7:30. Two shows on the 28th, afternoon at 2. Evening at 7:30, closes with a matinee on Sunday the 29th at 2 at the Black Box Theater inside the Johnson County Arts and Heritage Center. Used to be a King Louis mm-hmm. bowling alley,
yep.
an ice chateau, and other things along the way. Now it's a fine theatrical building. at 8788 Metcalf in Overland Park, Kansas. Thanks so much for being with us. TheBarnPlayers.org. Blessed place to go for more information on that. Thank you, Daniel. Daniel Vasquez, the stage manager for Ragtime, opening this Thursday evening. We're going to take a brief break. Then when we return, oh, the holiday season starts. It seems to get earlier every year, but I don't mind because it's always interesting to talk about the Kansas City Repertory Theater production of A Christmas Carol, adapted from a story by Charles Dickens. And we will talk about that when we return. You're listening to the Arts Magazine radio program right here on KKFI. 90.1 FM.
Freeze Frame! Hi, I'm Russ Simmons with Freeze Frame, KKFI's weekly look at the newest cinematic fare in theaters and streaming. Thanks to Taylor Swift and her army of Swifties for saving the lackluster fall box office. The big screen version of Taylor Swift, The Eras Tour, has already scored one of the biggest box office hauls of the year and set new records for a concert film. Shot over a three-day set at SoFi Stadium in Los Angeles in August, the concert focuses on selections from multiple albums divided into 10 acts. Like the recent Barbenheimer experience, the Eras Tour proves that people will show up at local theaters if they feel like they're participating in a special event. So, is it special? Well, the movie gives fans exactly what they want, a flashy multimedia extravaganza that showcases their idol in a well-directed, skillfully lensed spectacle. One quibble, while the sound quality is uniformly good, non-fans would benefit from subtitles. Naturally, Swifties already know the lyrics, but general audiences might better understand why Swift connects so strongly with their fans if they could read her lyric poetry. Bottom line, Taylor Swift fans will be in heaven, and non-fans will probably be entertained too. From the other end of the cinematic spectrum, Oscar winner Nicolas Cage stars in Butcher's Crossing, a bleak Western drama based on the acclaimed 1960 novel by John Edward Williams. Cage plays Miller, an Ahab-like buffalo hunter in 1870s Kansas who becomes obsessed with taking the biggest haul of pelts on record. Fred Heschinger plays Will, a green Ivy League dropout in search of adventure who joins in on the incredibly risky adventure. The man versus nature and man versus man themes come through in this respectable effort, but Butcher's Crossing is a grim viewing experience. Well, that's it for this edition of Freeze Frame. Until next time, I'm Russ Simmons with Fox 4 and KKFI FM. Freeze Frame!
Are you making a positive impact in your community? Let your story be heard through KKFI's Community Voices series. We're on the lookout for inspiring individuals and organizations that are making a difference. If you have an initiative that you'd like to highlight, head over to kkfi.org/communityvoices and share your story with us. Together, we can create a stronger, more connected Kansas City.
This is Maria Vasquez-Boyd, producer, host of Art Speak Radio, inviting you to tune in every Wednesday, noon to 1 p.m. for Art Speak Radio. We serve up information about the visual and literary arts community, including live interviews with artists, writers, performers, musicians, art organizations, plus arts supporters. That's Art Speak Radio every Wednesday, noon to 1 p.m., only on 90.1 FM, KKFI, Kansas City Community Radio.
Yes, indeed. Yes, the holiday season is right around the corner. It might seem a little early, but well, if you look at our schedule, it's not. Yes, the 60th anniversary season, I believe I'm right at 60.
You are?
The Kansas City Repertory Theater will be doing A Christmas Carol, adapted from a story by Charles Dickens. It was probably a novella, is that what they called them in those
mm-hmm.
days? It would appear in 1 week's edition of the paper, then the next chapter would be the next week, and the next. So that's the way people had to get the story.
He actually made a pretty fine living going touring that and doing like a one-man show.
Yeah, that's what I heard.
Christmas Carol.
Did he play all of the characters?
I assume.
Yeah. I wonder which one he had the most fun.
I know, right? That's a good question.
But Jason Chanos is with us. He is, he's several things. He is the Associate Artistic Director of the Rep. Well, that's not good enough. He's the director of this show, A Christmas Carol. And he is also, and we talked a little bit about this last time. If we have the time, maybe go into this a little more. He is part of the Kansas City Rep / UMKC Theater Partnership.
Yeah.
That they have going on.
It's
over
a mouthful,
here.
Isn't it?
Yeah. Well, I've got the mouth for it. What can I tell you? Performances begin for The Christmas Carol on November 21st. And that's a weekday, so I'm guessing that that is probably a preview.
It's the week of Thanksgiving,
yes.
First Tuesday of Thanksgiving.
I gotcha. Yeah. And performances will run all the way through Christmas Eve, December the 24th, at the Spencer Theater on the campus of UMKC. If I've sparked any interest so far, the website is kcrep.org, and the central ticket office number is 816-235-2700. But don't do it right now. Listen to Jason in his interview, and we'll talk about all of this. The 60th anniversary season. I guess the temptation is always, or maybe you consider it a duty, I'm not sure, but to do something a little bit different every year. Because a lot of us have seen, I've probably seen 25 of them over the years at least, and I didn't go every year. So I've seen quite a few.
Well, fortunately, this show requires that we do something a little different every year, whether I want to or not, because just by virtue of who's in the cast and, Gary has different, every year we do a breakfast after the run and talk about things that we liked and didn't like and things we want to change. So I'm not going out on a limb and making changes just for the sake of the 60th anniversary, but there happens to be quite a lot of changes just by virtue of the evolution of the show.
I remember talking with, which actor was it? It was John Rensenhouse at the time. And I asked him about some things that were different. He said, well, Michael, that's because we're doing a different adaptation. How many different adaptations has the Rep done? Do you know?
Okay.
There's several.
Yeah. Well, I know that the Barbara Fields version lasted, God, I want to say 3 decades.
Yeah, it was very popular.
And then Eric's version. We did that for 2 seasons. And then this version, the Jeff Elliott, are we on 3 now? I think we're on version 3. And the beauty of working with Jeff is that he allows us to make it our own. So he's not rigid about word for word, accuracy in terms of like, we like to add music. Our script is very different than others you might see around the country in that we have a lot of music in our version. And Jeff's didn't necessarily have music, but he wanted us to include that. So we get to kind of play with it a little bit. Another thing we're doing this year is, we have the sort of famous Candlelight Carol where actors are coming on stage and they're carrying candles and they sing, Come All Ye Faithful. And we've been doing the Cratchit scene before the Candlelight Carol and the Fred party scene after, and we're flipping those this year so that we can see some aspects of the story that we haven't been able to see before. We have Nikki Dixon coming in as the storyteller. Walter is on tour with Funny Girl. So there's little tweaks here and there that are going to be dramatic differences to me. I don't know if an audience member who only comes once would notice, but they're also exciting. They're going to be spectacular changes, and I'm super excited about it.
Well, good. That's a pretty good selling point. If people have seen it before, but maybe not for a few years.
Right. Yeah, well, I think some of our audiences, when I'm chatting with them in the lobby, they talk about they take a year on, a year off. They'll go see the Nutcracker, and then they'll go see Christmas Carol. They'll see the Nutcracker, and then a Christmas Carol.
Well, you can see both.
You could.
They're both. They might be on same nights, but they both have long runs.
It's a busy time of year. As a father of 4, I can tell you it's not easy that time of year to make lots of plans. So.
Sure, I'll bet so. Last time you were on, you were talking about, you were here for a while, then you went somewhere else, and then you came back here, but I forget.
I graduated from UMKC in 97 with a graduate degree in acting directing. Did what the faculty told me to do, which is go to the East Coast and, make my make my fame and fortune. I lasted about 2 years, but you know, the East Coast, that urban environment, I grew up in Denver. So I was a hiker, backpacker, you know, outdoorsman, and I found the East Coast to be challenging for me. So I didn't last very long and kind of went on the regional circuit. And I was a regional actor for, I want to say like 20 years before finally landing on the West Coast in LA. And I lived there for 10 years before coming here to take this job. So yeah, left here in 97, moved back here in 2015, and all the stuff in between was just a giant adventure.
I'll bet so. Your hiking background probably did you well walking the streets of New York.
Yeah.
All of the people I know that live there say they do a lot of walking because yes. You can't always get a cab. You can't always afford a cab or other mass transit. The subway was very popular.
No,
if you could get to a subway station.
Right. Yeah. I just need a little more grass and trees. You know, everybody has their different vibe, what kind of place they like to live. And I love visiting New York, but I just wasn't where I was wanting to live.
Yeah, well, it's not for everyone.
Right, yeah.
It's not for everyone. Sometimes this is better. Now, when you mentioned your time at UMKC, was that the famous MFA program? and it is famous.
Is it famous? I didn't know about the famous part, but yes. That was the Dale Rose era. He was in charge then when I was there. And kind of think of it, you know, there are actually a lot of people from my class and the class before me and the class after me that went on to become really successful. So maybe it was famous, but it certainly didn't feel famous at the time. You know, at the time it was just a grind.
It was a lot of work.
It's a lot of work.
Which it is.
Yeah.
Learning things like that, it really is. Oh, yeah. I was told a quote one time that somewhere in the world, on any given performing night, some UMKC student is in a show.
Wow. Where, yeah. Well, that's flattering.
Did all this lead to wanting to direct? Actors always want to direct. Sometimes directors want to act.
That's not true. I actually, directing kind of, it fell to me. When I was in Los Angeles, you know, almost immediately after I got there, there was a strike. There was a writer's strike. So I'd gone there to do film and TV. Immediately ran into a strike. So I started applying to colleges and universities to be an adjunct, just to make a little extra money. And the program that I landed with was Pepperdine, and they wanted me to direct. And I was like, okay, I guess. So that was how that happened. That was a requirement, but I got used to it. You know, I started to kind of find my groove with it. And when I came here, I actually didn't expect to direct when I was here either. But you know, being on staff, it was somewhat of an expectation. So the first show I directed here was Of Mice and Men. And I hadn't even directed A Christmas Carol yet. I was the assistant associate, and even I was in the show. I was Bob Cratchit. But after Eric retired, I became the director.
Yeah.
And now I feel like, I have a handle on this.
Well, sure. Do you feel like some do? They have to put their own mark on it.
No.
It's been done so many times. You say no. Okay.
I don't. You know, when I think about doing the show, I think about it through a couple perspectives. The itty-bitty audience members that are out there, that's who I think about a lot. And then the folks that have made this part of a family tradition for decades. Those are the two groups of people I think about. And so I'm really telling the story to be as accurate to Dickens as possible, to be as theatrical as we can be with the resources we have, and to make it clear and specific. So I don't wander too far into the into my own sort of like vision of being, you know, super spectacular. I really kind of stick within the lines of the story, or try to, I should say.
Sure. You know, it's been done here, at least. almost every year, save one, I think.
Yeah, we did a Christmas Story.
Yes, I remember that. I remember seeing that.
Yeah, it was good.
We were all surprised, but some people were saying, well, it's nice to have something different for a change. Then I would always point out, well, they always change it a little bit. I remember one year the publicity came out, and the publicity that at least I got said a darker version.
Oh, okay. So that might have been Kyle. You know, Kyle did it.
I think so.
And he was unabashed at saying, this is a ghost story. Mm. This is a ghost story, and I'm going to tell it from that perspective. So he did like kind of that edgy, darker. And I do too. And where it's appropriate, we lean into that. But there's also, you know, especially when you have somebody, when you have a cast like I have that are really happy, positive individuals, you know,
sure.
That you want to tell a story from that perspective when you have that talent. And so, and also, you know, I have people around me that that influence me. I have an amazing associate director, Mackenzie Goodwin Tran, who is always kind of like whispering ideas to my ear as we're working, and so far, I mean, she's been right every time. So I have lots of advisors that
Met her. We've talked about her philosophy of the various shows she was involved with, and you're right. She has a lot of ideas, I think.
Yeah.
And as far as the darkness of the story, I knew right away, and it happens early on in the story. The ghost of hope. I'm not giving anything away, and I hope you haven't done this because I'm giving away one of your hooks, if I am. But Marley had the chain around Scrooge's neck. And so some people went, ooh.
Yeah. Well, you know, Marley is the fun of Marley, that the entrance is supposed to be terrifying and it's supposed to terrify Scrooge and all of us for that matter. But intermittently, as the scene goes on, there's moments of ridiculousness. And this is just pure British humor, honestly. And you can choose to ignore that or embrace it. And so that's kind of what sort of undermines the terror of the drama, at least in that first scene. And I think I kind of shied away with that when we first began, because I was like, oh, that's taking me out of it. I want to be horrified. But now I'm like, oh, that is so British. We've got to have that in there. Mm-hmm. And we also have, you know, we have the ghost of the, what's, the official title is the ghost of,
past, God. Present, future.
No, it's not future. It's yet to come.
Okay.
But my shorthand is always future, and I'm always hardwired to say future. That sequence is scary. It's scary. There's no way around it. There isn't any sort of like any ways to kind of diffuse its scariness.
You can't see the face.
Can't see the face.
The first one especially, kind of a friendly,
and you
kind
know,
of a friendly ghost.
We do follow some of the sketch work of the you know, these ghosts that were done, that were put in the novella, and you know, it looks like the Grim Reaper. The ghost looks like the Grim Reaper, and there's no getting around that. So we have, hopefully by then, you know, softened our audience a little bit to, you know, we're not, this isn't all terror and horror the whole way through, but it does get that way to there in the future. And then we lighten everything up when we turn the lights up and Scrooge is dancing around the stage. So we've hopefully reclaimed some of
We all fear the unknown. I think that's what does it more than anything else. I think that's even one of Scrooge's lines. Something to that effect.
Mm-hmm.
You know, figuring what's going to happen. And without giving anything away, if you haven't seen any version of it, there are things out there that give you a moment of pause, thinking of your own mortality even, perhaps.
For sure.
What can happen. And that's a challenge for the director to decide how far you want to go with what, because you do have a lot of school audiences.
Yeah. Well, honestly, if I just let Dickens' words do the work, it's the show takes care of itself.
Sure.
And, you know, I had the pleasure of reading all of his novels over the course of two summers. And, I mean, it goes without saying that the genius of his writing, getting a chance to work with that in a theatrical format is unbelievably sure. satisfying.
Well, he has a certain style about him. He speaks up for the downtrodden, certainly.
Does, yeah.
That fits into every one of his stories.
Mm-hmm.
And that's probably what he had in mind. But as you mentioned earlier, he had quite a career of traveling it around. And from what I've read, at least played all, if not all, most of the characters in the story.
I mean, wouldn't you love to have seen that?
Oh.
Wow. That's one of those things where you wish you could get into a time machine and go back and watch him perform his own material.
Yeah, that would be something to see, certainly.
You know, and I think the Geffen did, some years back, they did a one-man version of A Christmas Carol. I didn't see it, but I'd be so curious, you know.
Sure. There's been so many versions of it.
I mean,
which one is the most interesting? George C. Scott was interesting. Yours, of course. Both Garys. I've seen both Garys.
Well, if you talk to my associate director, she'll say the Muppets was the best version.
Well, Mr. Magoo was kind of realistic, I thought. But it's been interpreted a lot of different ways. But it's still the same story of redemption and how one can come to a realization about what life is really about.
Yeah, I think. When we were deciding on a new version, I went around and saw lots of versions across the country. One of the things sorry if I'm repeating myself from last year, whenever we spoke last, one of the things I loved most about ours was the amount of music it has. I mean, it's basically a musical, and that delivers the message on a different scale. I think it lands it in a different way because I don't know about you, but I love musicals. And so being fed, you know, having that sort of that feeling of music roll over me while I'm hearing these beautiful words being spoken, it just, it just has an impact that is.
Sure. It does indeed.
Memorable.
Excuse me. But before time gets away from me, and it is starting to, tell me about some of the performers in the show. Some of them have been with the show a long time.
Yes.
Others are new, I'm sure.
Right. So I mentioned Nedra Dixon. I don't think she has even seen the show, interestingly.
Interesting.
Yeah.
In all these years she's been here, and she's been in town here for a while.
Sure has. I remember when she auditioned, she just kind of came clean and was like, I haven't seen this show. And that may have been actually one of the things that helped her get the role, because she had a completely fresh version of the storyteller that we hadn't seen before, and with good reason. And so I'm pretty excited to have that voice on stage because it's going to tell the story with a very different perspective than somebody who kind of knows the story and certainly knows what points to kind of land, but I'm going to get to see the story from a fresh perspective when I see her rehearse. So that's exciting. Gary, of course, he's been, I think he told me 20-something years as Scrooge, but 30 years having been in the show.
Yeah. Gary Holcomb did it before him.
Uh-huh.
And I've noticed that people confuse the two Garys. and I did an interview some years ago when Gary Holcomb was still alive, and they were doing a show together, not The Christmas Carol, but they talked about those days and all of that, what that was like. And they've both done the show, and Gary Neal has probably done it for many years more than Gary got to do it, the first Gary got to do it.
Yeah.
But I find that interesting.
When I was a student, Gary Holcomb was Scrooge. And I didn't really process that at the time. I was 20 whatever, and so I was just like, I'm in Christmas Carol. But in hindsight now, I look back and I go, wow, I was on stage with one of the greats.
Uh-huh.
And didn't really even notice, didn't realize.
Sometimes it takes a while for perspective to sit
it
in.
It sure does.
I was so touched by him in that interview. It was a play. I can't think of the title, and that's not important. This is a Christmas Carol interview. But they were but they were talking about being a veteran that had suffered and was disabled mentally in a way. And Gary told that story, and he revealed that he had been a Vietnam veteran who had those kind of problems. And it was really quite touching. You learn something new about people all the time, and I did about him on that occasion.
Well, somebody like that also had the courage to reveal that part of them when they performed. So whether you knew it or not, you were looking at a fully authentic representation of a very complicated person playing True. A complicated character. And you can't necessarily pinpoint what it is that's great about that when you're 20 something. But if I had what I had now then, I think I'd be mesmerized. You know, it's a masterclass on acting.
Yeah.
And I see that. Actually, I see that with a lot of the folks that we have in the cast. I think that's one of the sort of, unspoken pleasures about doing this show is that I get to work with the best.
Absolutely.
It's humbling, intimidating, I might even add. You know, they're sweet folks and they look at me with, adoring respect, but on the same token, I'm like, wow, I'm sure. Starstruck that by who's in front of me.
That is true of this show, especially. I for one, will miss Cheryl Weaver, who did the show for years.
For sure.
Did various roles in the show for years, but at any rate, the 60th anniversary, and we are running out of time, The 60th anniversary season of A Christmas Carol, based on the book, actually novella, by Charles Dickens, will be playing at the Kansas City Repertory Theater. It's the 60th anniversary season at the Spencer Theater. Performances begin November 21st, and that's a weekday, so I'm guessing that's probably a preview.
Two previews, just Tuesday and Wednesday, and then we take a break for Thanksgiving, and here we go.
And runs through the 24th. Mm-hmm. So you have a lot to choose from, but you need to go to the website or call the central ticket office location to find out the exact dates and times. But they do many more shows than that. They do special shows for schools and things like that. So that's quite a number of performances for the cast during that period of time.
Yeah.
Really is. It's a little over a month, and I'm sure it gets to be a grind for them, but
they also, get very close.
They do. It's like I've heard those stories. It's like they become a family during that time, and it's nice to see that happen. But A Christmas Carol, part of the Kansas City Repertory Theater, pretty much an annual production now, opens on, I guess, in previews on the 21st, so it would be
Sunday.
Thanksgiving.
That's Sunday after Thanksgiving. So what is that? The 26th.
There's no calendar in here. But call them or go online. Go online to kcrep.org or call the central ticket office number, which is also located at UMKC, 816-235-2700. And it's been great talking with Jason Chanos.
Oh, thanks
Chanos.
For letting me talk about it. Always a pleasure.
Yeah, Jason Chanos. And we'll talk about the partnership in more detail next time you come on.
Okay.
He is the Associate Artistic Director of the Rep and the Director of The Christmas Carol. Thanks so much for being with us. The Jazz Canadian is next. He'll have some great music for you. And the jazz from 1 to 3 and the blues from 3 to 6 right here on your community radio station, 90.1 FM KKFI, Kansas City's community radio. So until next we meet, ladies and gentlemen at that cross in the road, I'm Michael Hogue. We'll see you next time.